Welcome to the Locked On Steelers podcast. I am your host, Tony Serino, and this is your daily dose of all things Steelers. Today on the podcast, we are doing our 2017 re-review. This will be day one of that. We're going to review the first 4 weeks of the season of 2017 today, starting with the Cleveland Browns and ending today's podcast talking about week four's victory over the Baltimore Ravens, the first time the Steelers had beaten Baltimore in quite some time. Just a programming note before we get into the podcast. I do want to mention, if you are listening to this podcast the week that it is coming out and you are expecting to hear, you know, the Steelers news of the day, or if there is some big Steelers news that you're expecting to hear today, this is pre-recorded. I am on vacation this week, and so these podcasts were recorded prior to the week that you are hearing them. So if there is big Steeler news, come back Monday of next week, and I'll be back to talk about whatever Steeler news that is. But let's get right into it, the 2017 re-review. The 2017, a very interesting year. It was somewhat of a expectation versus reality type of season. There was so much expectations and hype coming off of where this team left in 2016. Yes, they lost to New England in the AFC Championship game in a blowout, but there was a ton of excitement about what this team could build upon that in 2017. Excitement about the talent, you know, excitement about potentially working some more man-to-man into this team and trying to get over the hump against the New England Patriots. You know, offensively going into 2017, I mean, we were loaded, right? This team had talked about 30 points per game being a real barometer for them offensively. And when you talk about the talent that they were returning in 2017, you talk about, of course, Ben Roethlisberger, Le'Veon Bell, and Antonio Brown, the Killer Bees. They returned the entire offensive line. And then if you look at what happened in 2016 with the amount of injuries and suspensions and just, you know, missed opportunities with that offense in 2016, it felt like all of those wrongs would be righted in 2017. And, you know, they would have, of course, the Killer Bees back, but, you know, Eli Rogers, who had emerged in 2016 as a very good slot receiver for that team. And because of some of the injuries and suspensions that they had outside of Eli Rogers at wide receiver, you know, Eli Rogers was probably asked to do more than he would have had, you know, say a guy like Sammy Coates stayed healthy, or if Martavis Bryant had not been suspended. But speaking of Martavis Bryant, there was so much excitement going into 2017 because he was coming off of suspension. You know, he certainly looked like a guy who, you know, was reinvigorated by coming back to football and getting his life back on track and staying out of trouble. There was a ton of excitement there. And then, of course, we added to that offense by getting Vance McDonald during the preseason in a trade with the San Francisco 49ers and drafting Juju Smith-Schuster, a wide receiver out of USC, in the second round. And of course, we were also anticipating bringing Sammy Coates in from a year ago, who, you know, had a hurt finger and a hamstring injury that limited him throughout the season after two spectacular performances against Kansas City, the Kansas City Chiefs and the New York Jets. And that New York Jets game is such an interesting one from 2016 because, you know, Sammy looked good, but he left so many passes on the field with the finger injury, he wasn't able to grip the football correctly. But, you know, it really just felt like going into 2017 that there was an embarrassment of riches offensively. And if we could get Martavis Bryant at even close to what he was in 2015, if we continue where we left off with Eli Rogers, of course we knew what the Killer Bees were going to bring to that offense. We knew the offensive line was going to be very, very good again. And then the questions were all going to be about, you know, Vance McDonald and how would he work into the offense? Where does Juju Smith-Schuster fit in? There weren't a lot of question marks offensively as far as how good could they be. We knew that they could be very, very good. The questions were just going to be who was going to be the guys to step up. Defensively, it was much more pessimistic, I think, because of the way that they played in the preseason. Questions about the secondary, the loss of Lawrence Timmons, of course, and who was going to play inside linebacker next to Ryan Shazier. You know, it ended up being Vince Williams, and I don't think there was much of a competition there. But the question really was going to be about, at middle linebacker, was Ryan Shazier ready to step up and take a more dominant role at inside linebacker? And was Vince Williams ready to be a starter on that defense? At edge rusher, the questions were about, you know, TJ Watt and James Harrison and who was going to be the starter there. And It felt like, you know, maybe TJ Watt, the starter, and Harrison, you know, kind of comes off the bench as a bullpen guy when you need him. There was more excitement, though, about the young players in 2017, especially more than there is today. You know, Artie Burns, Sean Davis, Javon Hargrave, that 2016 draft class, were all coming off of relatively impressive rookie seasons, and we all felt like, you know, they could definitely improve on that year 1 to 2 and be three quality starters on that defense. And then Bud Dupree, the same thing, right? Bud Dupree had a sports hernia the year prior, 2016, so he missed pretty much half of that year, but came off a very good second half of that season, and there was some momentum building there. So you had four quality young players coming off of, you know, impressive seasons, and you felt like if any of those guys could build off of it, they would be very good. Much of the same things we're saying today about 2018, you know, we were saying about 2017, right? We were hyped about the offense and not just the returning talent, but the new talent, right? And of course, this year it's James Washington and Jalen Samuels being added to that offense. It's Juju Smith-Schuster in year two and what he can bring to that offense. It's a healthy Vance McDonald in this offense. And I think a lot of us are still pessimistic about the defense in a lot of ways. You know, who's going to replace Ryan Shazier? And it was the same with Timmons a year ago. Question marks in the secondary. You know, there were questions about how much Joe Haden would make an impact and whether or not, you know, those young guys would step up. I think all of the questions we have about Sean Davis and Artie Burns are still the same. And you replace, you know, our kind of trepidation with who are we getting in Joe Haden with, you know, somewhat of trepidation this year with Morgan Burnett, right? What are we getting in Morgan Burnett? Can he stay healthy? Those same questions. I think whereas there was excitement for the young players in 2017, of course, today it's much more of an exasperated, like, all right, you know, which one of you guys is going to step up? Because we've been doing this for too long now. But a lot of the things that we're saying this year in 2018, as far as it being Super Bowl or bust and the excitement about offensively and defensively, not really knowing what we're going to see, was a lot of the same things we were talking about a year ago. And so that brings us into week one. Actually, before we get into week one of the 2017 season, let me tell you about our sponsor for today's podcast, BlueChew.com. If, like the 2017 Steeler defense, you need some increased performance, some extra confidence, not necessarily on the football field, but in the bedroom, well then, Blue Chew is the product for you. Blue Chew is the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know they work. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach, and since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill. The best part about Blue Chew is that it is prescribed online. There is no awkward doctor visit. There is no awkward conversation with the doctor. There's no waiting around at the pharmacy. There's none of that. You're going to go online to BlueChew.com. You're going to fill out a simple online form. They're going to take you right through it. They're going to prescribe it to you online. It's going to ship to your door in a discreet package, and they prepare and ship directly. They're made in the United States, so they're cheaper than a pharmacy. And even better than that, right now, I have a special deal for you. If you go to BlueChew.com, you're going to get your first shipment for free when you use the promo code LOCKEDON, LOCKEDON. You're just going to pay $5 shipping. Again, that's BlueChew.com, BlueChew.com, promo code LOCKEDON, and you're going to get your first shipment free. BlueChew, the better, cheaper, faster choice. And we thank them for sponsoring today's podcast. All right, let's get to week one of the 2017 season, the opener against the Cleveland Browns in Cleveland. A dangerous start of the year against the Cleveland Browns. It's a division opponent. It's on the road. Yes, it's the Browns, but remember, this is the Browns before they know they're the Browns, right? They're 0-0, just like everybody else in the league. And so they've got the same kind of hope and optimism that everyone else in the NFL has. You got a taste in this game for how different 2017 was going to be versus the expectations. And I think this is one of those things we can learn from 2017. You know, our expectation of what this football team is going to be and the play on the field don't always match, and it certainly did not match early in the season. The storyline to me out of these first four games is offensively the struggles that we had getting a rhythm. And it certainly felt like until Le'Veon Bell got going in week four, this offense really didn't have a whole lot going for it other than Ben Roethlisberger and Antonio Brown. Ben Roethlisberger never looked comfortable throughout the entire four-week stretch, whether it be this game against Cleveland or against the Minnesota Vikings the next week, or Chicago or Baltimore. I mean, none of these games. Ben Roethlisberger did not look comfortable. And it if you look back now and watch these games, it becomes pretty clear that Ben just isn't comfortable with who he's throwing the football. He's not on the same page as Juju yet. Vance McDonald hasn't really, you know, been a part of this team for very long at that point. Remember, he was traded during the preseason. He just was trying to get used to that new wide receiver core. He's got Martavis coming back in off of suspension. He's not the same Martavis. He's going to try and work him back in. And of course, you know, we know probably what they were dealing with in the locker room with Martavis, being a guy who wanted to be this superstar and yet didn't have that kind of superstar talent anymore. So didn't have it yet. Didn't have it all back yet. So, you know, I'm certain that it was not an easy situation for Ben Roethlisberger, but it you know, he didn't make it any easier on himself. There was a lot of over-reliance on Antonio Brown to make plays, and not say that that's a bad thing, but, you know, there was certainly forcing the ball to Antonio Brown, especially against Cleveland. There was an over-reliance on going downfield and the kind of big chunk style of offense that I talked about. I hope that we don't see that again in 2018. It's just not what this Steeler team is good at right now. And it wasn't a year ago. I think it was probably because of Martavis and wanting to go vertical with Martavis. And look, we have James Washington this year. We'll see how much they go deep with James Washington. But I don't like the idea of just throwing it deep because you want to, right? Throw it deep because he's open. You know, he's got his man beat, that kind of thing. It didn't happen that way in 2017 at the beginning of the year, and it just led to stalled drives and wasted plays and that kind of thing. You know, this offense to me works best when it's running through Le'Veon Bell, and because Le'Veon didn't get going really until week four, and I shouldn't even say he didn't get going. You know, that's another storyline that going back and rewatching these four games, it becomes very evident that it was not that it wasn't the same Le'Veon Bell early in the year. It's that the Steelers didn't use Le'Veon Bell the same way in the first 4 weeks. I think they were very hesitant to use Le'Veon Bell with the full load that they normally give him because of the fact that he missed training camp. I think they were concerned about whether or not he was in football shape. And so they didn't, you know, he only got 10 carries against Cleveland. He looked like himself when he was running the ball, but he didn't get the number of touches that he normally gets within this offense. And so I think that led to a shakier offense. Defensively, look, they were good against the Browns. They had 7 sacks. It wasn't a terrific performance, but they were certainly good. The 7 sacks, though, some of this is deceiving, and I think a lot of what the Steelers defense did early in the year was somewhat deceiving. While yes, they are holding teams to under 20 points, while yes, they are getting a lot of sacks and offenses aren't really finding their rhythm, I don't know how much that has to do with how the Steelers defense itself was playing and how much of that had to do with the fact that the offenses they were playing were just not on the level. Not. You look at DeShone Kizer and that offense, and you know DeShone Kizer held the ball so long that you 5 of those 7 sacks the Steelers had were probably coverage sacks. You go into week 2, they face Case Keenum. Again, Case Keenum didn't look like the Case Keenum we saw later in the year. He had gotten short. That was a short week for them coming off of a Monday night game. I don't even know if he knew he was going to start because of Sam Bradford's injuries. They thought Sam Bradford was probably going to play that game. He ends up not playing it. Case Keenum didn't look like himself, and the Vikings offense didn't look very good. Mike Glennon and the Bears offense, I mean, they were a bad offense all year. They were especially bad passing the ball against the Pittsburgh Steelers. And then Joe Flacco and the Baltimore Ravens, I give the Steelers credit for what they did in that game, and in that they really did shut down Joe Flacco, and Flacco had an atrocious game, but you know, he wasn't playing well at the time. The one thing you can give the Steelers credit for in that game is that Flacco always has good games against the Steelers defense. The worst game the Steelers defense played throughout these 4 weeks was without a doubt the Chicago loss. And that was a game that had a lot going against it, right? That was the national anthem game and the Steelers in the locker room for that and Villanueva in the tunnel. And so that became a controversy after the fact. But how much of that affected the game, who knows? But that, you know, everything that could go wrong against the Bears did. There was a muffed punt that Eli Rogers had. There was a blocked field goal. There was a sack fumble. The Steelers just not making it easy for them. And then defensively, it was, like I said, it was one of the worst games they played all year. And I know that they held Mike Glennon down to, I think it was 100 yards passing, but the run defense was atrocious for large parts of that game because they couldn't tackle. So many of the big runs in that game were runs that could have been tackles for loss, and yet they just missed. They took bad angles. They missed tackles, and it led to plays that should have been tackles for loss ending up in 5, 10, 15, 20-yard rushes. And in Tariq Cohen's case in overtime, I mean, that was a run that, you know, probably should have been 10, 15 yards, ended up being 40, and led ultimately to the touchdown that would end that game. A really poor performance defensively in that game. And yet, in the second half of that game, they held the Bears to 0 points. They got some turnovers in the second half and gave the Steelers offense a chance to win. And the Steelers offense just, you know, again, being as out of rhythm as it was, as uncomfortable as they were, they couldn't put anything together offensively to muster more than 17 points against the Bears defense. I tell you what, it is really shocking looking at these four games. Yes, the Steelers were 3-1 in the first 4 weeks of 2017, but it's really weird to watch this team play, knowing that they end up 13-3, knowing that, you know, going in, they were one of the best teams in the AFC coming out of this season. But you watch those first 4 weeks and just how average this football team is. There was no juju yet. You know, there was no this offense didn't have any rhythm yet. Ben Roethlisberger was not slinging it around for 300 yards a game. You know, AB was playing very well. Yes, defensively, they were playing well against poor offenses. But if this team had faced, you know, the likes of the Eagles or one of the top teams at this point in the season, I think they would have got smacked around. And that leads us, because this goes right into tomorrow's podcast. We're going to talk about that Jacksonville game. I think watching these four games gives me a little more context of what happened in Jacksonville. You know, we talk about that game being a fluky game, but that game may have just been a culmination of everything that had happened these 4 weeks prior. So that'll do it for me today. Thank you all for listening. If you want to leave feedback, SteelerCountry@gmail.com is the email address. You can find me on Twitter @SteelerCountry. And I'll be back tomorrow to review games 4-8 of the Pittsburgh Steelers 2017 season tomorrow right here on Locked On Steelers.